Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome to episode 229 of Geek Town Radio. I'm back this week with Gray.
Hello, hi Dave, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I am good, thank you. I'm mostly out of my funk of reality TV, and after my last episode, even got a little tweet from Matt at Entertainment Talk, just in his disappointment that I was obsessed with some of the programmes.
Yes, rightly so.
Oh, you know, it's just that habit now of not being a teacher. I can sit there in the evenings and channel surf and find some random stuff on.
yes. There's better things out there to watch, though.
I know. And I have been trying to get through some of the better things myself.
Good. So what have you been watching then?
So since we last went on, I have just finished Taskmaster Season 9. I know we're going to talk a little bit more about it later on in the podcast, but it was one of the better episodes. I think David Baddiel and Joe Brand are in this season, and
oh,
it was
cool.
Absolutely fantastic and really did make me laugh. It takes me back to some of the early seasons, which are really good, and makes up for the disappointment of Season 8. So I finished that, but we'll talk about that a little bit more later. Yeah. I binged through Queer Eye Japan on one Sunday, which came out a couple of weeks ago. I liked it, but I just wasn't sure. I really just want them to come to the UK. I think we've been crying out for a UK version.
And, that would be nice.
It would be nice, and it was good. A lot of concentration because obviously it's subtitles, but there were some really interesting makeovers there. Only 4 episodes, so really easily bingeable. And in that same weekend, I also finished Big Mouth, which I think I heard you and Matt talking about a few weeks ago.
Yes,
they are quite funny. They're putting it out there. So very sex positive. Talking about young people, they're doing it in a jokey way because it's a cartoon, but it is really relevant. And, you know, if I was a teacher still, and I maybe had to teach sex ed, I think I'd probably be tempted to show clips of that, of that program, because as funny as it is, it's also quite spot on and quite true and really taps into topics that you probably wouldn't get in a proper drama because of the sort of the content. I finished Living With Yourself,
which
I was hanging on to a few episodes of that last time we chatted. You know what really got me, and I'm not normally someone to pick out on this, but the music, the soundtrack and the score to that series was really gripped me and really mesmerizing. It just was an uneasy take on a sort of like a black comedy. I really enjoyed it. It put it in the realms of Russian Doll for me, that it was funny yet kept me hooked and played with time and changed the perspective and how you're seeing things. I really liked it.
No, it's a great show. That it's really enjoyable, and I can see the comparisons with Russian Doll. It's that kind of strange, quirky, off the wall idea for a show. So yes, it works really well. The music's by Anna Meredith, apparently, who is a British composer. So
have you managed to find out if she can come on for an interview? Because I think she would be really interesting.
She's not one I know. It depends whether she's got, because all the composer interviews come through an LA agent. So it depends whether she's got an agent over there. But she's more known as a classical composer, than anything else, which is interesting. But she did Bo Burnham's 8th Grade as well.
Good. No, I really, really, really enjoyed that. Obviously, very behind on the times. I finished Big Little Lies finally.
I still haven't seen a single episode of Big Little Lies. I'm terrible.
Season 1, really good. season two, good, great acting, great performances, great cinematography. Just the plots were a little bit like, meh. Great. Meryl Streep was brilliant in her first ever sort of foray into TV drama. It's beautifully shot, some great stars, but I just think too many stars, not enough plot, and not didn't grip me enough.
Right.
But that's out of the way, that's done. Let's see if they bring on a season three. Just in my general sort of day-to-day, I'm doing lots of catching up, and I think I've become this new free person of being a teacher. I've really started thinking about things I may have wanted to watch and started going back and trying to find them rather than picking up lots and lots of new things. So recently I'm working my way through the Schitt's Creek back catalogue, so I know the final season's coming out next year.
Yep.
So I think I'm in season three at the moment. Our Country, I was in this big swathe of people who seem to miss Our Country. I know that's got a new season coming out next year, so I've been catching up with that, which is the two teenagers in a Cotswold village.
Right, yes.
Absolutely hilarious. I watched it on a plane recently, and I just, everyone was looking at me because I was physically laughing so much. They were like, "You're right." And I was like, "I'm absolutely fine." and if anybody hasn't seen it, the second season of Young Offenders just got released on the BBC iPlayer about a week ago.
Right.
And it is being compared to the Derry Girls in terms of, but it's about two boys. The second season is okay so far. I enjoyed the first season more. But obviously, sometimes the second season does go through that patch of being recognised, so they might struggle to get some good plot lines and story elements to it. But it's still a nice, fun sort of comedy, really takes off the movie it was based on in 2016. So that's me, really. I've been really enjoying this free time and not worrying about, oh, I must get through all the current shows. I've been trying to really look back and think about what I really wanted to see. But yeah, really enjoying it. I'm worried about Christmas. Too much coming onto my plate. I don't know how I'm going to cope. But you know what? I do that every year. Dave, what about yourself? What have you been up to?
Really, it's just been a continuation of the things that I've been watching for the last few weeks, actually. I'm about four episodes into The Crown now. They did a really powerful episode, which is on a mining disaster that happened in the late 70s, I think, which was a mining disaster in Wales, which wasn't an incident I was aware of. And it was sort of how the government dealt with it and how the Crown dealt with it, and the sort of the new government basically trying to deflect the fact that this accident had happened on their watch by sort of deflecting it towards the Crown and sort of saying, oh, well, the Queen hasn't visited, and sort of throwing the blame on her as well. Yeah. So that's kind of all really interesting. It was quite a powerful episode, that. So I'm really enjoying The Crown. New cast works really well. You don't even miss the old cast at all. It just continues on. It doesn't feel like there's been a huge change, even though all the main players are all different. It just works still. Very much has the same feel to it, I think.
I'm still a bit behind. I finished season one very recently. I'm midway through season two, so I'm just trying to really sort of hurry myself through season two before I finally do watch season three.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
Yeah, no, I mean, much as I like the original cast, the old cast, the season three cast is absolutely killing it. And as I say, you don't notice the fact that the cast has changed all that much, which is really good. Over on Apple TV, I'm still watching C and The Morning Show and For All Mankind. C is really starting to find its feet. It's quite slow in the first few episodes while they're kind of world building and setting everything up. It's got more and more interesting as they're going in. It's sort of in the same way that Peaky Blinders, which is Stephen Knight's other show, has this sort of slow build to it. It's got that, and they're doing a really good job on sort of building that world and building it out, and they've got lots of twists and turns that sort of come in from unexpected places. So I'm really rather enjoying that, and I'm looking forward to watching more of it. For All Mankind was a little bit slow at the start as well, and that has sort of picked up. They've put a few time jumps in it, which I mentioned was something that I kind of wanted to see, because you're starting to get to the point now where they are out of the straight sort of alt history of just tweaking things that we know happened, and you're now kind of move forward a couple of years and you're seeing them kind of do things like moon bases and stuff. So you are seeing more movement into a very different direction, which is really intriguing. So I'm very much enjoying that. And the morning show is great as well. It's a really interesting take on sort of a morning show hit by a Me Too scandal and how they deal with that. And it's about the relationship of the less of the person that was accused of the scandal and more about the people that are left behind than anything else. And particularly the Jennifer Aniston's character, who is the female co-host of the male host that was accused. So it's how she deals with that and the new co-host, who is a woman that comes in. And so it's about that relationship. But that I'm very much enjoying. Apple have got some really good shows. There's not many of them. I mean, it is only $5.99 a month, and there isn't that much original content on there, but everything they're doing, they're really doing well. It's sort of decent, you know, your HBO high quality style drama. So they're doing a great job. And I've, you know, spoken to a few people that are working on Apple series, and it seems to be Apple's approach to a lot of their stuff is very much hands off. It's like, here's a pile of money, go and make something, you know, and they're letting the creators kind of do what they want and not interfering in any way and just letting them get on with it. So I'm really intrigued to see what else they come out with. Walking Dead and Watchmen, of course, we're carrying on with that. We're doing weekly podcasts with Matt at Entertainment Talk, over on Entertainment Talk for those. So Walking Dead, which has its mid-season finale later this week, you can go and catch that over there. And Watchmen, I think, has got four more episodes. There's one gone out this week, and then there's three more after that. So Watchmen's been an absolutely superb series, and Walking Dead's been great this season as well. Really turned a corner from where it was a couple of seasons ago. So I'm very much enjoying both those. But if you want to know more about that, go over to Entertainment Talk on Wednesday. The new podcast will be out for those. And there was another bit of news that dropped today. The Teen Led Walking Dead spin-off, which has been nameless up until this point, it's coming to Amazon UK in spring 2020. It'll be AMC in the US. And it's got a title. It's called The Walking Dead World Beyond. And there is a new trailer up for it as well. There's been bits and pieces drop out. It basically follows this group of kids that are the first generation to grow up in a world full of zombies. But the kids have been very much in a protected community, you know, so they're not really that experienced with dealing with zombies, and they end up leaving the community to go on some form of quest, I guess is the best way to put it. They're experiencing the outside world, the world outside their protected community for the first time. So it looks really interesting, that one. I don't know how well it will go down, and it is the third spin-off of The Walking Dead so far, so we'll see how it goes. But it has some connections to the group that we last saw taking away Rick Grimes, so there is some connection there as well. So it could be really an interesting one to watch, that. But that is coming to Amazon UK in spring 2020, so that, and that's called Walking Dead The World Beyond.
I don't know how, you know, I know they've got the other two movies coming as well. I just don't know how they are sort of stringing it out a little bit, but we'll see where it goes. I lost faith in it a few seasons. I know I've talked about it before. But, you know, if it works, good for them. I don't know how much the audience will continue going for it. I think that hopefully they might pick up a new trend, but I'm not sure. I'm a little bit skeptical about it, but that's because maybe because I'm no longer a viewer.
Yeah, and there is a certain amount of skepticism generally around like them turning The Walking Dead into a franchise and them adding more and more shows. And AMC are sticking with The Walking Dead. There were stories floating around about, oh, it may end soon, you know, they're bringing it to a close, and the main show may come to a close at some point, but there's absolutely nothing confirmed at the moment. As far as we're aware, they're just going to keep it going until the numbers get to a point where they're not making it worthwhile. But at the moment, the numbers are still there for it, so, you know, they're going to carry on making spin-offs, and you are going to carry on getting other shows. But I think in terms of the main show, they've really turned a corner on quality since Angela Kang took over, and it is worth getting back into. If you dropped out a few seasons ago, it is worth going back to. They have done a really, really good job, particularly the second half of last season and this season. I think they've really found their stride again. So it is worth carrying on with. And we'll see what the spin-off is like when that lands next year. So that's everything we've been doing this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news. We kick off the TV and film news with renewals, cancellations and pickups as ever. First one is not a cancellation, but it is coming to an end. Marvel's Runaways is joining the pile of recently got rid of Marvel series. Runaways, actually, they're saying, isn't a cancellation. The story sort of comes to a natural conclusion at the end of the third season. So they've just decided that they're going to leave it there. A lot of people saying, oh, this is Disney Plus that's causing this. It's not really Disney Plus that has caused this. I think it's more to do with Kevin Feige, who is now in control of all the Marvel TV stuff, whereas he wasn't before. And I think it's him streamlining things, because there was a number of shows like this and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and a few others that were kind of Marvel adjacent rather than being directly inserted as part of the MCU. Like even Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which started off as a sort of MCU property and is very much strayed away from that. I think he's just trying to tidy things up a little bit, and that's meant that some of these shows are going now. So Runaways is going, Cloak and Dagger is gone, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. comes to an end next year. They have got a new show,
Hailstrom.
So they have got Hailstrom coming, and that launches next year. They abandoned the idea of doing the Ghost Rider series, but they have got Hailstrom, which is coming to Hulu next year, so who knows where that'll end up over here. But so they're not completely abandoning TV shows that aren't directly MCU related. All the direct MCU ones are going on Disney Plus, so there will be Marvel TV shows going on to some of their other services as well. But Hailstrom's the one that we know of at the moment. We've got Netflix, which have renewed the zombie drama Black Summer. That is coming for a second season. I know Matt's a huge fan of this. He really likes it. I haven't seen it, but apparently it's got some fairly decent reviews from people that have. So that's good. Taskmaster, as you mentioned earlier, that you're watching on, Dave, it's now been snatched by Channel 4, and they've given it six more seasons over 3 years. So Taskmaster is moving from Dave to Channel 4. They sound like they're not really doing anything to the show in terms of changing the format. It's still going to be a mix of sort of up-and-coming comedians and established people. I don't think they're interfering with it in any way. They're just going to keep it as it is and have just going to be on Channel 4 now instead.
I think it's a really good decision not to change it. The format is really strong. What you get is you normally get a couple of really established comedians, a couple of up and coming, and then you get one, not rogue in the pack, but someone who's a bit alternative to the comedy scene.
Right.
For example, Richard Osman's done a season.
Right.
I also had Sally Phillips has done a season. I know she does a lot of comedy, but obviously predominantly as an actress. We had Katie Wicks in this season just gone, so predominantly a comedy actress rather than a stand-up. So it is really strong when you have that. And there have been some absolutely brilliant names across the nine seasons already. We say nine, there's actually been 10 because they did a Champion of Champions.
Oh, right, okay.
Season five, where they invited back the five previous winners to do. I don't know if that's in the Channel 4 remit. So after they've done season 10, which will be their first one, will they invite back, just give you the names that have won the past ones, Liza Tarbuck, Kerry Godliman, Lou Sanders, and the most recent winner, spoiler alert, Ed Gamble, might be invited back to do a chat. I'm not sure, but maybe. You know, maybe that could be their method. But it's a really simple format. It's now started to span lots of merchandise. You can buy games, you can buy books. That's really good. And it all came from, it's the brainchild of Alex Horn. You know, he just had this idea, and it's a fantastic idea. And they're now putting all the episodes out onto YouTube if you don't have a UK TV Play subscription or Sky. So someone like yourself, Dave, I know hasn't caught up on a lot of them. I believe if you follow Taskmaster on Twitter, they give you the link to the YouTube where they're putting out some of the older episodes, and you can go to some of the better seasons. And in my mind, seasons one, 2, 6, and the one that just got 9 are some of the best seasons.
Okay, cool. I might go and look those up. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, so, and it seems like a natural place for it. I mean, it seems very much like a Channel 4 sort of show. So, you know, I think Dave will obviously be upset about losing it, but it seems fair enough if that's what they want to do. So, and they've got, you know, like I say, 6 new seasons. So you're getting 2 seasons a year. It's over the next 3 years. Another great show that's returning is New Amsterdam, part 1 of season 2, which is the first 9 episodes, will be coming to Amazon Prime UK. That's got a date of the 9th of December now. I'm very, very much looking forward to that coming back because season 1 was brilliant. It's one of the best medical dramas out there. Interviewed the cast for that a few months ago. Was it last year or this year? I can't remember, but we have interviewed the cast for that. Just great. And it's Ryan Eggold in the lead as the medical director of one of the oldest and only public hospitals in the US. So it's just really well put together and different from medical drama. So that's, I'm glad to have that back 9th of December for that. Sticking with Amazon Prime, The Grand Tour, which if you've been following the news, you'll know that The Grand Tour has shifted its format for the upcoming season. So it's not going to be a standard season of shows. They're basically going to be a collection of those Top Gear-esque specials. They are doing the first one and it's based around boats and they have a childish sense of humour. They've called it The Grand Tour Presents Seamen. So that's coming on the 13th of December. To Amazon Prime UK and worldwide. That is turning up. I didn't actually watch much of the last season. It sort of landed when there was a bunch of other things on and I just didn't get around to it. I might watch this because it's a special though and it's a sort of feature length thing, I think. So be interested to see that because I quite like those sort of specials that they do. And it's the fun is watching them mess around in things. And in this case, it's going to be boats. It's going to be very, very much the same sort of format. But yes, I'm looking forward to that coming back. Doom Patrol has finally landed a UK broadcaster. WarnerMedia continues their effort to try and put all their properties on as many different networks as humanly possible. So this one is going to StarzPlay instead of anywhere that's got any of the other shows. StarzPlay, the 2nd of January, that is arriving for season 1 of Doom Patrol. It's slightly annoying that it's not ended up on Netflix because Netflix have Titans and Doom Patrol did appear initially in Titans. So there is some connection with those series. But yes, it's not. It's going to StarzPlay instead. But that's 2nd of January. That's arriving, apparently. And over on Netflix, though, they've got a date for Better Call Saul. That is arriving on Monday, the 24th of February, and Tuesday, the 25th of February, because they're doing it over 2 nights for the first 2 episodes. So we're at season 5 of that. We will, of course, be covering that on a weekly podcast over on Entertainment Talk as well when that comes back. There was a whole bunch of dates announced for January, announced that they will be coming back in January. No exact dates yet, but January on Sky One, we have season 2 of The Thick of It, The Rookie season 2, SEAL Team season 3, Chicago Fire season 8, and Avenue 5, which is the new Armando Iannucci series that is coming to Sky One in January as well, they have announced. So lots of stuff coming in January. Speaking of stuff coming in January, although this might not actually be January, but Arrowverse, bit of an update on that. We're checking the schedules recently. The crossover episodes had disappeared off the schedules because they were supposed to be coming in December. They've now changed their mind. They're moving all the crossover episodes to when the Arrowverse shows return in the new year, which is actually usually kind of mid to late February. I know that's going to annoy some people that you're not going to get to see the first couple of the crossover episodes. They've decided to bunch them all together. There's still no update on Batwoman. We don't know when or where that series may land. All we know is it's not going to be on Sky at the moment. I think part of their reasoning for moving it might be to do with the fact that Batwoman hasn't appeared anywhere. So that sort of messes the crossover up a bit anyway. And I'm kind of thinking that they may have thought, well, since it's messed up anyway, we may as well just hold it until we can run all the 4 episodes they do have together next year. And hopefully somebody has announced that they've got Batwoman and started running it by then. But I don't know. I don't know exactly what their thinking is. But all we know is that it's not that they're not airing them. It's just that they've moved them all to the new year instead. So Yeah.
it's almost like 5 weeks ago when we were last on, we were talking about it, and I know you and Matt have talked about it. It's just so frustrating. Let's not get into it anymore, Dave. It's frustrating.
Yes, it is frustrating. It's not Sky's fault. There isn't anything they can do about it in terms of the Batwoman series messing up that crossover. It wasn't there to be bought, so they couldn't buy it. It's apparently gone to somebody else. They don't know who. We don't know who. We're still waiting for it to turn up. But with any luck, by the time that they do air the crossover, that somebody may have announced that they've got it, but who knows. Moving on to other news stories, Netflix have ordered a sequel to Vikings. Did you ever watch any of Vikings?
No, never on my radar. I remember seeing it, but I never got into it. Was it used to be on like a really bizarre channel before it?
It runs on the History Channel in
there
the US.
You go.
It's on the History Channel in the UK as well, but it is also on Amazon Prime. It actually premieres on Amazon Prime and then History UK runs it 6-12 months later, something like that. So Netflix have actually ordered the sequel to it, though. It's from the same creator, Michael Hirst, and writer Jeb Stuart. It's obviously going to be about more Vikings, but it's set 100 years after the original series and dramatizes the adventures of the most famous Viking who ever lived, Leif Erikson, and Harald Hardrada, and the Norman king, William the Conqueror, who is also a Viking descendant. It's going to be 100 years after the original show. The strapline says these men and women will blaze new paths as they fight to survival in an ever-changing and evolving Europe. This is explosive next chapter of the Vikings legend. So the original series ran for 6 seasons. Its final season is coming fairly soon. That was all the story of Ragnar Lothbrok and all his descendants. That was the original story. This is going to follow a whole bunch of different people. So it is kind of set in the same world, and it is more Vikings, but set a little bit later. So I think this is interesting. It's an interesting pickup for Netflix as well, because Netflix UK have never had Vikings at all. It's been on Amazon. It's another one of those that's a slight sort of poking Amazon in the eye again to steal some of their properties. There's a lot of that going on at the moment. The original series was great. I'm not quite up to date. I'm still a little bit behind on it. I need to go back and finish watching it, but I really enjoyed it. It was really good. I'd be glad to have more of that. 6th and final season of Vikings premieres Amazon Prime UK from Thursday the 5th of December, and it's 4th of December on for American people over on the History Channel. We've also got a new adaptation at CW of the Midnighter novels, which aren't books that I know at all particularly, but it's from the team that are behind Blindspot. The Midnighter novels follows an estranged brother and sister who on their 29th birthday discover they are Midnighters, part of a chosen few born at midnight who have access to a magical 25th hour of each day. While they can use this extra magical hour for fun or to gain an advantage in life, they ultimately learn that their destiny is to protect the world from an ancient evil that has been trapped in the 25th hour for centuries and is about to break free. That's the setup for it.
I'm not sure. It's interesting that Blindspot are taking it. Obviously they're just a production team, but I'm not sure. It doesn't spring to, oh, I must watch this.
No.
But I thought I want more. I want casting, maybe. I want... Also know what channel it's going to go on to. In the UK, it helps direct us to know if it's coming onto a certain channel, we're like, oh, it's going to be in that sort of style. So
Yeah. I mean, it's been pitched for the CW, or it's in development for the CW in the US. So that kind of gives you some idea of it being young, pretty people, probably. Although, as I say, they're supposed to be 29, the cast. So it's not going to be like, you know, a teen drama. It's going to have like older people in it, or older by CW standards anyway. Chris Posobom, who was a writer and co-EP on Blindspot, he's set to write the script. His previous work includes things like Schitt's Creek and Open Heart, the Canadian drama. He's going to EP this series as well alongside Blindspot creator Martin Grieco. This is actually the second show that Grieco's got in development at the CW, because they're also doing a remake of the 70s martial arts series Kung Fu, which I think we mentioned previously, which is he's actually developing with Greg Berlanti of the Arrowverse fame. We'll see whether it actually goes anywhere. They've tried making this a couple of times before. Third time for Warner Brothers trying to make this into a TV drama. They acquired the license 14 years ago. First one was done by Brian Kern, who was the EP of the original Charm series. Then when that didn't work, the guys behind the series, Chuck, had a go at making it, and that didn't make it past a script either. So see whether the third attempt lands anywhere. But
yes. Third time lucky. That's a very odd statement.
So we'll see. But yes, it's in development at the moment. It might not move forward. We'll have to wait and see. And we're back to the historical dramas on Sky now as well, because they have got a new series coming. It's set in ancient Rome. It's kind of a co-production between various departments of Sky, including Sky Italia. It's called Domina and stars Kaiser Smutanak, Liam Cunningham, and Isabella Rossellini are the leads in it. It's set in ancient Rome, but it does everything from the perspective of the women rather than the men, which I thought was an interesting idea. So stars Kezia as Livia Drusilla, who is on a journey from a naive young girl whose world crumbles in the wake of Julius Caesar's assassination to Rome's most powerful and influential empress, driven by a deep desire to avenge her father and secure power for her sons. Livia and her peers navigate their way through the brutal society by means of strategy, conspiracy, seduction, and murder. This is a visceral and authentic family saga grounded in historical accuracy that brings to life the incredible true stories of the women who would create one of the most enduring and fascinating dynasties of all time. So I'm really down for this. It sounds like a really interesting idea. The other cast, Liam Cunningham, who you know from Game of Thrones, you've got Isabella Rossellini, who's been in a whole host of things, Blue Velvet, Death Becomes Her, Matthew McNulty, who was in Misfits, who's playing the future Emperor's Gaius. You've got Christina Bottomley, who's in End of the Effing World. Charlotte Tinoccio, who's in The Witcher. Ben Bates, who was in Captain America First Avenger. Claire Fortalice, who was in Meet Joe Black. So yeah, a whole host of people. It's got a good cast. It sounds like it's going to be a kind of full-on historical drama with lots of murder and intrigue and like backstabbing, quite literally in this case, because it's Julius Caesar. So starts off with backstabbing. It's from Michael Burke, who was the writer behind Zen and Fortitude. The lead director is Australian filmmaker Claire McCarthy, who did The Luminaries and Ophelia. Got costume designers behind The Age of Innocence and Once Upon a Time in America. Production design by the people behind Prison Break. Makeup by the people behind Penny Dreadful. Hair design by the person behind Trust. So yeah, they've kind of gone all out behind the scenes of putting together a really stellar people. Roman history thing that interests you?
It didn't as much. I mean, I visited Rome last year and was quite fascinated by it. I can see it already, the marketing at Sky. It's going to be a real epic number, isn't it? Along the lines of like your Britannias and things like that and Catherine the Great. So I can see it fitting quite well with Sky. But I might give it a view, maybe the first episode, see if I can cope with it.
Yeah, I mean, they're going all out with their sort of big, what we sort of refer to as HBO style, like big dramas. So yeah, I mean, this seems to be one of those, and they've done a great job with some of the other ones in the past. And so Britannia's a little bit more like less based in history, more based in kind of a mixture of history and other weirdness that they've added over the top of that. So yeah, a sort of straight, like really brutal look at this world, I think could be quite interesting. So I'm quite looking forward to that. I like those sort of things. Rome's fascinating as well, so that could be one to look out for. So that's all the news we've got for this week. Let's move on to the interview. The interview this week is with the stunt coordinator, Charlie Crowell. He's a really seasoned stunt coordinator. He most recently worked on The Laundromat, which is the Netflix movie, which you can go and watch on Netflix right now, starring Meryl Streep, which means that he was prepping Meryl Streep for the various stunts. So that's like fascinating, because stunts and Meryl Streep aren't really things that you think of together particularly. There was one particular scene in The Laundromat where they had a tour boat, which was loaded with a bunch of older folk, and they had to capsize it with Meryl and a bunch of other people as well. So it was sort of talking her through that, making sure Meryl's okay, and dealing with like water stunts and all that sort of stuff. His background, he was the stunt double for Michael J. Fox in the Back to the Future movies, and actually was stunt double for Michael J. Fox pretty much throughout most of Michael's career, or a lot of Michael's career. So he's done a whole host of other movies as well, from La La Land to Planet of the Apes to How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Men in Black 2, Batman Returns, Hulk. His latest thing he's just done is the Disney movie Call of the Wild, starring Harrison Ford, which premieres early next year. So there was a whole load of stuff to talk to him about, particularly working with people like Michael J. Fox and obviously working on The Laundrette and Meryl. So he was fascinating. He was really interesting to talk to. He's got some great stories. Here's stunt coordinator Charlie Crowell. We'll see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV. It's lovely to be able to have a chat with you, because the amount of things you've been involved in is ridiculous. So I'm very much looking forward to be able to talk to you a bit about some of the stuff, particularly The Laundrette, which is the new thing you've been working on. Working with Meryl Streep, not really known for her stunts. So how was it working with Meryl and getting her prepped for this?
She was awesome. You know, when we had a scene with her, the hardest scene for her, or the one that we thought was going to be the hardest, was we had to capsize a boat with, what do we have on there? Total of 41 people, all elderly. And then I had a crew of 13. I think I had a total of 52 people or something on that boat or in the water at the same time. Meryl was great. You know, I let production know that I needed to get her in the water in a tank just to see what her comfort level was.
Right.
And so they scheduled it. I was to meet her at Body Glove's dive tank down in Redondo Beach. Her assistant showed up. We went over everything that we had in place. I had two dive masters, two safety swimmers, my daughter who doubled Meryl, and myself. And Meryl showed up. She pulled up into the parking lot and got out of her car. And I started to explain to her what we were going to do and what we had in place and all the safety precautions and everything else. And I said to her, and I said, on the day, you're probably going to be wearing something different than you are now. It's going to be similar according to the costume designer, but it may not be exactly this. And she goes, no, it's exactly this. I said, like shoes and everything. She said, this is exactly what I'm going to be wearing when that boat rolls over. I went, wow. She showed up totally prepared. I explained to her what we were doing. We went into the room that has the dive tank in it. And she was like, let's go. Let's get in the water. 30 minutes later, we were done. It was amazing how fast it was. She was completely comfortable with it. She was comfortable with the safety, with the, you know, having to breathe off of air, because we had to take her down to the bottom of the tank.
Wow.
Hold her there, and then let her come up and become neutrally buoyant. So she had to be able to just hover in space. And she did it. It was flawless. I can't, you know, she's one of the easiest I've ever had to deal with.
Wow. That's amazing.
She's amazing.
That's really amazing. That scene in itself, with the boat rolling over, how do you prep a scene like that? Because that's got to be a major stunt.
It is a big scene. I mean, safety was a primary concern prior to filling the tank. The effects department, who built the boat and the gimbal and the whole mechanism, they were going to do a rollover to test it. So we all showed up, all of my safety people. I had them all there to see this rollover and see what it was, you know, what it was going to do. Were there any pinch points, anything like that? Then they filled the tank. We went back the day before we were going to shoot it and did the same thing with all of the safety people, all of the stunt people. Everyone knew at the end of that, it's kind of a slow rehearsal, so that we roll the boat over for everybody so they can watch it.
Right.
Everyone was in the water. Everyone had masks on. Everybody could see exactly what this thing was going to do. Then we put all of the stunt people on board, had all of the safety people in the water. And I think I had 5 Navy SEALs, I would say 5 or 6 dive masters. I mean, safety swimmers, surfers, everybody in that water was incredibly handy in the water. And then we put all the stunt people on board and we rolled it over so everybody could get the ride, figure it out. And I told everybody, stay on the boat. Don't come off of the boat for the rehearsal. Just stay there. See how it settles. We have safety people all around the boat keeping an eye on you while you're underwater. If you're in need of something, go to the surface. or signal to your safety diver who will be right there with you, next to you, signal to him that you need assistance, you need air, whatever it is. But you're only 5-6 feet from the surface anyway. So, you know, you can just swim up unless you have an issue, you're stuck or something like that. And then on the day, we all showed up. We basically did the exact same thing, rolling the boat over so that Merrill and the actors could see what it was all about. You know, showed them video from the day before of the test. And then we loaded the boat up and rolled it over.
Yeah.
And they did a fantastic job. Fantastic. My daughter doubled Merrill for the actual rollover. What we did with Merrill was we put her underwater inside the boat. And the shot is looking straight at her as all these people are trying to get out. You know, people are dying and their bodies floating and so on. And so she did. So we took her down. Callie took her down. Got her on air, got her in position. We had a little platform down there so that she could support herself. And we shot the whole scene in 8 hours, which is unheard of.
Yeah.
Soderbergh is amazing when it comes to that. His planning and execution is just top notch. And you could set your watch by his planning.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. You mentioned your daughter's doubling for Merrill there. The whole family is actually involved in the stunt industry at this point, isn't there?
They are, yeah. All my kids. I have 3 kids, 2 boys. And my daughter, Callie. Callie's the youngest. And they all do stunts. You know, they all grew up racing motorcycles and cars and jumping off of buildings. And we set them on fire when they were kids. And, you know.
I was going to say, did you encourage it? But by the sides of it, you did.
Yeah, you kind of live that life, you know. They see you do it and they go, hey, can you set me on fire? Yeah, sure, I'll set you on fire. Let's go. And we step through it. You know, everything is done extremely safely.
Of course.
You know, whether they're your kids or not. So they've been through it. My daughter, Callie, started when she was 4 years old on Planet of the Apes.
That's amazing.
It was a great experience.
In terms of how you got into it, I mean, one of your earlier jobs, of course, was working on Back to the Future, where you doubled Michael J. Fox. Were you involved, because Michael J. Fox kind of joined that movie later on, were you involved in the earlier bit? Because it was Eric Stoltz, I think, they originally cast in that role, and then he was recast. Were you involved at that point as well?
I was not. It's an interesting story. I had started doing stunts in New York City, so I grew up on the East Coast, and I had gotten a job. Suzuki had called me to come to Redlands and do a print job for them on a new motorcycle that they were introducing, and myself and a girl were just going to ride around the campus. So when I was here for that, I went around and I introduced myself to all of the stunt people, all the stuntmen's associations, everybody in Los Angeles, because I didn't know them personally. You know, you never really had contact. There was no crossover. And they all said, God, you work all the time. Your size is perfect. There's nobody like you. Come on out. So a month later, I moved out. A month after I got here, what you used to do at that time was you had to find out where the stunt coordinators were shooting on any given day. And then go and visit them and introduce yourself to them in person.
Right.
So that's the way it was done at that time. We didn't have social media. We didn't even have cell phones. You know, we had maps. That's it. And a lot of quarters for the telephone. So that day, you used to sneak on the lots. You kind of have people there on lot, on like at Universal Studios or Warner Brothers, wherever it may be. You identified people who were, you know, helpful to you and getting on the lot. So there was this one person at Universal Studios, and they that she used to let us in regularly. And she had there was a room there where all of the call sheets for the day for all the shows that were being shot were stacked up. And that's where you would go. You would grab one call sheet from everything, and it would give you the address and who's there and so on each show. And this one day, which was exactly a month after I arrived in LA, I went into that room. There was a call sheet on the table, one call sheet, and it said Back to the Future on it. And the stunt coordinator's name was on it. So I thought, well, I'm going to go and introduce myself to that guy. I didn't know who Mike was. I didn't know anything about him. And I walked to the back lot. And as I was walking up to the stunt coordinator, Michael walked out of the stage, and we both stopped in front of the coordinator. And Mike asked if I was his double. I looked at me and looked at Mike and went, yeah, he's your double. And that was it. And that was the very first day that I worked on it. And that was Mike's first day as well. Wow. So from that point on, I doubled Michael all the way through him going to Spin City.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was 12 years. Yeah.
Obviously, with that, there was a lot of skateboarding involved in that movie. Did you skateboard at that time, or was that something you had to pick up?
No, I skated at that time. My brother and I used to skate around our hometown. That's how you got around. You know, you'd either hitchhike or you'd skate or you'd grab onto somebody's bumper while you were on your skateboard and they would drag you around town. So I did skate. You know, I wasn't a pro skater or anything like that, but I was confident on a board. And the first gag I had to do was the scene where Michael is being pushed backwards by Biff in Biff's car.
Right.
And he runs up and over the top and lands on the board. So that was the very first gag I did for Mike, which was great.
Yeah, that was shot up near the observatory, wasn't it? I seem to remember, I think. Well, that tunnel scene.
The tunnel was Biff chasing Michael.
Right, that's it, yeah.
My first day was on the courthouse square on the back lot of Universal.
Right, yeah.
Where Mike's on the back of a car and Biff's chasing him. He's hanging onto the back of a truck and shoots off towards courthouse and Biff continues. That was the first gag. But yes, up in Griffith Park, up at the observatory, all the stuff in the tunnel, the flying, everything else, I did all that as well.
I remember. Yeah, yeah. As you say, you stuck with Michael throughout, right up until Spin City. And some of the other movies, I always scroll back through the IMDb to see what the first credit is, just because I find it really interesting. Toxic Avenger.
It
was the first one on there, which is fabulous. But I mean, you've worked with some amazing people. You did the Masters of the Universe movie, Next of Kin, so working with Patrick Swayze, Batman Returns, Frighteners, which was Michael again, Men in Black 2, The Grinch Stole Christmas, What Dreams May Come, which is a horrendously underrated movie with Robin Williams.
Yeah.
How was that experience working on something like that with Robin?
Robin was amazing. When Robin showed up on set, we had a lot of extras, especially in this one sequence where we were in a library. People are floating all about. He's up in heaven. He's going to see Max von Sydow. And Robin, when he showed up on set, he would not hang out in the director's chairs or by the monitor. He would hang out with the extras and did a live show every day.
Wow.
Every day. There was something going on, and he was just going on and on. It was great. I directed the second unit on that as well.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So one day I was filming a scene with Robin's double and Cuba Gooding Jr.'s double sailing into the library and then rising up out of the boat and flying up to Max von Sydow. You know, normally I would only, since I was doing the second unit, I would only get the doubles. Well, Robin and Cuba showed up first thing in the morning. They walked in the stage and I said, what are you guys doing here? They said, we're here to work. And this was on the weekend, their day off. And they showed up, they got in the rigs and we brought them in the boat. We flew them out of the boat. We flew Max von Sydow, who was, God knows how old he was at that time.
It's got to be getting on a bit even then, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably 500 or 600 years old by then. Anyway, he was an amazing guy to work with. He really was. He was a true talent.
Yeah, what a great experience. Other movies you mentioned, Planet of the Apes there, where you said your kids were involved in, which is fabulous. The Hulk with Eric Bana, Die Hard, La La Land, and some of the TV shows as well. You did a bit of work on The Morning Show recently.
I did. You know, I don't normally do TV. I haven't typically, but done TV, but I was offered a show here in Los Angeles, which spans about 6 months.
Right.
And they're about to go into their fifth season. And I thought, gosh, what a great idea. I'll stay in town. I don't have to travel all around the world. So I did. I did that show, and The Morning Show came up. Mimi Leader and Cheryl Ann Martin, the producer's director, called me and asked me if I would do the show. So they don't have a lot of stuff, but when they do, I go in and I do whatever they need done.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't strike me as something that has a huge amount of stunts in it, but I noticed you were doing that. It's been a great series as well. I know we're only about 5 episodes in at the moment. So, but yeah, it's been really good that. And The Rookie was something else you worked on, which I know shoots in LA as well. I adore Nathan Fillion, just a huge Firefly fan. So how's the experience? Because that obviously has a lot more stunts working on that, I guess.
It does. I mean, Nathan is awesome. He's a great guy, extremely capable. When I saw the pilot, they asked me to do it. It had already begun shooting, but they needed to replace somebody. So I watched the pilot and I thought, wow, this is awesome. I'll do this. So I did the first season last season, and my assistant coordinator and my daughter do it now.
Right.
So they've been doing it this season while I've been doing other shows.
Yeah.
I did Animal Kingdom as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's with Finn Cole. Do you know Finn?
Yes, yeah, yes. I've met Finn a few times because of Peaky Blinders.
Ben Robson and Finn Cole. Ben was, you know Ben?
Not spoken to Ben, but yeah.
He did Vikings or something. I think it was Vikings.
Yeah.
Those are great guys. Really, really good group of people.
Yeah. In terms of other TV shows, one back in your past, you did some work on The Pacific as well.
Yeah.
That must have been a phenomenal thing to, if I imagine that was quite harrowing and hard work to work on that, a show like that.
You know, you're in the same conditions that they would have been in the real battle.
Yeah.
When we were shooting Okinawa. So I got called to go in because they didn't feel that enough people were dying or appeared to be dying.
Right.
So I went in, we replaced the entire stunt crew, and I had a local guy, Mitch Deans from Australia, and Scott McLean as my Australian counterparts. They brought in a team of guys that were amazing, outstanding guys. We put them through, I guess it would be death school or dying school or something like that. Anyway, we taught them all how to die properly, you know, how you really die,
right? Yeah.
In that, you know, kind of situation. Hollywood has, you know, kind of glorified death a little bit.
Yeah.
And things that happen on a lot of movies don't actually happen in the real world, you know. But it was a great experience. I loved the group of people I was working with. It was massive battle scenes every day. We would kill as many people as we could or make it appear to. They were only killing a handful when I arrived, and I went to costumes and I said, I need 40 uniforms every day, 20 Japanese and 20 allies. And they said, that's crazy. I said, but that's what I need to do. I need to kill as many people as possible. So they then sent them to the special effects guys, who are actually British also.
Right.
Great group of people. They set up I would go in the morning and say, what do you want to do? I said, I'm going to kill this guy this way. I'm going to kill that guy that way, blah, 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 blah. And they would set up the uniforms so that were blood packs and squibs and all of that. And then we had a guy, there was an amputee stuntman in Australia.
Right.
And I thought, wouldn't it be neat if we could build him a leg and blow his leg up when he steps out of mine? And so the effects department built us a prosthetic leg for him. It wasn't an explosive. It was an explosive charge, but nothing that would actually injure him. And he's running across the battlefield with the gurney in hand, and we blew his leg off. And he goes down and gets shot. It was a great, great experience. It's amazing. You know, you don't realize what war is like until you actually have to reenact it for real.
Yeah.
And the things that people go through or went through is just, you know, horrific.
Yeah, it's I'm sure, really interesting experience doing something like that. Obviously, you've been doing this for quite a while. Has the CGI side of things, which has sort of crept in, has that taken some of the fun out of doing things? Because something like that scene you mentioned in The Pacific, I guess they'd probably just blue screen the guy's leg out and do it that way at this point. So does it take some of the fun and creativity out of your side of things?
No, it doesn't. Actually, it adds to it. A lot of stunt guys don't like the introduction of CGI because they feel like it eliminates a lot of positions, and it does. But at the same time, it gives me the creative flexibility to go beyond you know, what is humanly possible. So if they had said, well, we're going to blue screen his leg and we're just going to blow it off, and I'd say, great. Then it's all about what leads up to that point and how we follow that. So it just kind of alters my approach to it, but it doesn't diminish anything I'm doing. It enhances what I can do.
Cool. That's good. Is there any time you've come across an actor who's really surprised you with their ability in terms of the stunt work?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Tom Cruise is awesome.
Of course.
He's really on his game. Everybody knows that. Michael J. Fox, he was an amazing athlete. He was a hockey player. There's so many actors, so many of these guys. Heck, Finn Cole, he's an amazing athlete. Ben Robson is. Sean Hattisey, last season I had to do an MMA fight with him. And I got some real MMA fighters, and we put Sean in a ring, and we had a real MMA fight, and he went at it. At one point, I said, you know, these guys are real MMA guys. They're used to getting punched in the face. You're both going to have gloves on, so you need to punch them in the face. For real, just once, so we can sell that the concept that it actually took place, and then everything else can be cheated after that.
Yeah.
But we have to see a fist hit a face. He was very hesitant at first. And the MMA guys, Roman Matichian, was one of our trainers. Absolutely amazing. A guy named Sebak. He said, no, punch me in the face. I'm good. And Sean punched him in the face. And, you know, he had gloves. We added a little extra padding to it so we didn't hurt him. But so many actors want to do the stunts. They want to do as much as they possibly can. So, you know, Charlize Theron, she's the same thing. We spent months training her for Aeon Flux in capoeira, in gymnastics, in dance. We had all kinds of training that we had to do with her. Wire work, and she was there every day on time working her butt off. So well, I give them a lot of credit. The majority of actors are very much into it. You'll get the occasional one that may have had, you know, an injury at one time, something like that. They don't feel entirely comfortable with it. So, you know, we then have doubles. We always have a double for every act.
Of course, of course. Is there one particular stunt that comes to mind which you're really, really proud of and is the thing you kind of hail of, that was awesome, I'm so glad we got to do that?
No, that's...
I know, out of your long, long career. Yeah.
I mean, the hoverboard flying was awesome.
Right.
Because we got to basically skate in the air. So everything, although it was all hanging from wires, or we were hanging from wires and we had to manipulate the board, it had to be just right to sell the concept of actually flying a hoverboard. Now, I would say that one was probably more involved over a longer period of time, just because there was so much to do. I actually have the hoverboard, the original hoverboard from the film.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. On the last day of flying, I used to take it home with me every night, but on the last day of flying, when I was leaving, the effects guys, they were just throwing away all of the other boards that we had. But I had one that the majority of the flying was done on, and I kept it with me, so I knew exactly where it had been. I was in control of it because I'm 25 feet in the air. I don't want to, I don't want somebody to have messed with the board at night. And on the last day, I was walking out and I said, I'm going to keep my board. And they all went, good for you, keep your board. You can have it. That's great. Well, so I have it. One of the only surviving boards from the show.
That's an amazing memento to be able to take away with you. The other thing you've done recently, of course, is Call of the Wild, which is the new Disney film with Harrison Ford and the dog, which is the main story, basically. How is it working with Harrison? And I mean, I'm assuming bits of that dog are obviously CGI, but I'm assuming not all of it is. So are you dealing with the animals as well?
Yeah, you are dealing with Harrison. First place, Harrison's an awesome, awesome guy.
Yeah.
There was a real dog that was used as reference, but then Terry Notary, who's a movement guy, movement stunt guy, I actually brought him on Planet of the Apes and the Grinch years ago. He was a circus performer in Las Vegas. I brought him in for the Grinch first. He and a bunch of other Cirque performers were the Who's.
Right.
And that's a great, you know, being able to use people like that, Cirque performers who are more than just athletes. They're actually, you know, they're performers, they're actors.
Yeah.
And incorporate them into the Who mentality. We had Who School. So we had a stage that was all about walking on stilts and walking on balls and trampolines and all kinds of crazy Who stuff. And then Terry came over to Planet of the Apes with me, and we developed the movement for the apes. We developed quadrupeding. Actually, we had ape school in my yard at my house. And that's when my daughter became familiar with everyone and the outfits that they were going to be wearing. So on the day that we had a scene where a little kid, you know, human, was supposed to be kidnapped by the apes and kept as a pet for one of the other apes.
Right.
And I thought, I'm going to bring Callie to work with me today because she's totally comfortable with everybody in the makeup and everything, because they'd spent, you know, a month and a half at our house.
Yeah.
Every day they'd be in makeup, everything else. And we got there, and the kids that had been cast were terrified when they saw the guys dressed as an ape, and they couldn't do it. And I had Callie and Tim and Tim Burton and Richard Zanuck were there. They were standing there on stage going, now what are we going to do? And I was standing there with Callie, and they said, what about Callie? Will she do it? I went, I don't see why not. Let's put her in the cage and see what happens. And she nailed it. She just did a great job. Mark Wahlberg saved her, jumped out a window. She was 4 years old at the time.
Wow. Yeah. That's crazy. Just as we wrap up, there was one other thing I noticed on your Instagram feed. You're the founder of a thing called the Earth Ocean Foundation. Do you just want to talk a little bit about that?
Earth Ocean Foundation, we started that. I've traveled around a lot of places around the world. And there's plastic everywhere, on every beach. And I spend a lot of time in the water. I'm a diver. We surf. You're always seeing the garbage. And I thought to myself, why can't I kind of started life after high school heading in the direction of engineering. I love engineering and I've just that kind of a mind. And I thought there has to be something we can do with all of this material before it ends up in the ocean.
Yeah.
If we give it value, if we develop products that everybody uses, that people use every single day, we just re-engineer what's currently on the market. Why wouldn't they use this if it works?
Yes.
So I started to develop different products, tiles and boat cushions and training equipment, you know, medicine bags or medicine balls, sandbags, heavy sparring bags, developed 21 products now. So what we're doing is we're interfacing with productions to take all of their plastic material. The productions collect their plastic. We then take it and process it so that it can be used in these products.
Oh, wow. That's an awesome, awesome project. Where can people find more about that if they want to find out more?
On our site. We have a website, earthoceans.foundation. That's going to be the best place for them to go. That's our website. Then obviously we have a Facebook page as well.
Yeah.
And we have an Instagram page as well. So all three of those places, they'll find all the information. They can get a hold of me through there. They email me directly. And, cool. You know, if somebody has something to say, we want to get the whole world on. We're trying to sell a concept, basically.
Yeah.
Give plastic value by utilizing it in products that people use every day already. And then it has value.
Yeah. It's a great, great concept. So last couple of questions for you that we ask everybody. First question will be, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
You know, it's interesting. I watch Big Bang Theory.
Yes.
I love that show. 2 and a Half Men.
Right. Yeah.
I don't watch a lot of TV. I watch more news, or I'll watch nature channels, Nova, things like that. That interests me. You know, if somebody's on an expedition, you know, National Geographic, that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of what I gravitate to. Every once in a while, you'll see an NCIS. I'll watch Rookie when the new season's on. I watch Animal Kingdom when the new season is on.
Yeah.
Other than that, that's pretty much it. Other than I watch a lot of movies.
Yeah.
I'm also a member of the Academy.
Yeah.
So I get hundreds of movies at this time of year. So I spend a lot of time watching them.
I can imagine. Yeah. And last question. If you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, can be something in the past, something present, or something future, not one you've worked on, which show would it be?
Mandalorian.
You good know choice. Mandalorian? Yo, yes. Yeah.
Well, a lot of friends of mine, actually, the foundation is working with Mandalorian on collecting all of their plastic materials.
Oh, cool.
So that's one way we are. A lot of my friends work on the show as well, but they already had people in place from the first season. So they're not going to just,
you know,
they're good. They did a good job. So, but that's definitely one that I would like to be on all day, every day.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there's more Star Wars things coming up over the next years, given the Disney are going to keep this going, I think. So I'm sure you'll get on one soon.
All right. I'll keep trying. Keep going for it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's been lovely chatting with you. I love your work. The stuff you've been doing is fabulous. And good luck in the future. And good luck with the foundation. Hope you get more plastic out of the ocean. That would be awesome.
Thank you, Dave.
And talk to you again soon, hopefully.
Well, thank you, Dave. I appreciate your time.
And you. Bye.
Bye.
So that was the interview with stunt coordinator Charlie Crowell. You can catch The Laundromat on Netflix right now. It is up there. That's the movie with Meryl Streep. The Call of the Wild, it'll be out in cinemas February in 2020. So you can go and catch that there. Now some highlights for next week on TV. So highlights for next week. We're getting into that period where the new shows kind of start to drop off a little bit, but we have got some stuff starting. The Fix, which is a one season show and cancelled, but that is a legal thriller that's coming to Fox on the 28th of November at 9 p.m. You can catch that. Fear the Walking Dead, the free to air premiere of season 2 of that is coming on the 28th of November as well. That's at 2 a.m. So I don't think they're expecting people to watch that live. You can stick that that in your planner, though. Servant, which is the M. Night Shyamalan series that is coming to Apple TV on the 28th of November. Sort of M. Night Shyamalan weirdness. I'm not even going to try and describe it. It's the usual thing you'd expect from him. But that's called Servant. That's coming to Apple TV on the 28th of November. Upright, which is the new Tim Minchin series. This is a comedy drama where Tim Minchin drags a piano across Australia, essentially, is the premise for it. That's coming to Sky One on the 28th of November as well. That is at 10 p.m. And The Rook comes to Stars Play on the 28th of November. This was previously, I think, premiered on Virgin, but it's now going on to Stars Play as well. This is an adaptation of Daniel O'Malley's supernatural novel about a young woman pursued by shadowy paranormal adversaries while grappling with extraordinary abilities of her own. 28th of November, basically, for all those things, which is kind of weird, but yes.
It's a Thursday thing.
Yeah, so they're all dropping on the 28th of November, which I think is a first. I don't think we've ever had that before. Oh. So there you go.
My pick is definitely going to be Upright. Out of all of those, I think I'm most looking forward to the Tim Minchin drama, a comedy drama. So that's going to be my suggestion of the week.
Yes, that would be the one I think I would probably gravitate towards as well. That's everything we have for this week, unless you've got anything else you want to just mention.
Not at the moment, no, but do follow me on Grey the Geek if you're going to over to Twitter. I probably won't speak to anyone before Christmas now, so enjoy your Christmas movies. My pick of Christmas movies is always Muppets Christmas Carol.
Of course.
So do go out and have a binge watch. Make sure everyone puts aside a day to watch some Christmas movies and get into the spirit.
Yes.
So other than that, I wish everyone a very festive period. I'm sure I'll talk to you all in the new year.
Yes, and obviously for us, we are still going right throughout December. We will have a huge competition coming up from next week as well, so check out that. Visit the website at geektown.co.uk throughout the week. See all the latest air date information. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye bye.
Bye bye. Bye.